Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Book and Film Globe podcast. I am your host, Neil Pollack, the greatest living American writer and the former editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, www.bookandfilmglobe.com. We have a special edition this week. We're going to host a roundtable about season two of The Pitt, which is the popular hospital soap opera, melodrama, medical realism show that just concluded its run on HBO Max. I'm going to talk to chief resident of Book and Film Globe, its current editor-in-chief, Dan Friedman, and also our now frequent audio contributor, Jessica Babbitt, who is very well-versed on all matters related to The Pitt. And they will join me right after this trailer from The Pitt.
And so it begins.
Welcome back.
Took some time.
Plus, who else is going to get this place to the 4th of July?
Your replacement came in early.
She's just covering while I go on my little sabbatical.
I have ideas for improving the department.
Okay, well. Want to tell me some more about your ideas?
Good morning.
Dr. Lincoln!
I would like you to go help Donnie out in triage.
Triage?
We can cover for you. We've been doing it for months.
Right.
All right. Well, I am now joined by the current editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe, Dan Friedman. He's here to talk with me on the podcast. Now, Dan is doing my old job, but he has a mysterious neurological condition that I don't know. I don't know, Dan. I feel like it might prevent you from doing the job correctly.
But is it the neurological condition that makes me sound like I'm from abroad?
I mean, I think that's part of it. regardless, you know, I have to question whether or not it's going to affect your ability to do the job. And
I'll try and be like Dr. Whitaker and sound like I'm among you while being from abroad.
While being actually British. And then we're also joined by second year Book and Film Globe podcast resident Jessica Babbitt, who...
Happy to scrub in today.
Thank you for coming in for your shift. As you might guess from our horrible medical jokes, we are here to discuss season two of The Pitt, which has just concluded its run on HBO Max. And, you know, in my opinion, is sort of the era-defining TV show of the moment. Mm-hmm. It is. If you want to talk about what peak TV, popular peak TV, looks like now, I think you have to bring The Pitt into the conversation, because it both adheres to a classic TV formula, and it also has some sort of stylistic innovations that I think make it stand out. So anyway, we're all fans. I've talked to both of you about The Pitt in emails and in person. And I wrote about it in this week's episode. So I wanted to get your take on how where you think the show kind of stands now. I mean, now we've had two seasons of this, so it's no longer a new phenomenon, right?
No, I think it's solidified itself as one of the staples of, you know, peak TV, prime TV for years to come. It's the closest thing we've got right now to monoculture, and it's exciting to have that back in our lives.
Yeah, and I watch it every week as soon as I can, mostly because the discourse is all over the internet. I mean, it's not like there's a ton of, the thing about The Pitt is it's not like there's a ton of plot spoiling to be done, because it all kind of takes place in real time, so to speak. And any character development that happens is very subtle.
I think it's interesting how little plot there is. Like, it does try and leave it on a cliffhanger, you know, as with any good weekly TV show. But I think, I found that's the one thing that's slightly disappointing. You start off with the cliffhanger, and then the next episode basically just avoids the cliffhanger and doesn't really matter anymore. And then you start off being disappointed, and then you get caught up in the characters again, and then you arrive at another cliffhanger. And that's true of the season as a whole. Like, the first episode is all about this baby Jane Doe, and then the next 14 episodes are we don't really care about baby Jane Doe anymore.
Well, except that we all like saying Baby Jane Doe.
Baby Jane Doe.
We all like saying, well, yeah, I think the part of the cliffhanger aspect is that, you know, it can end on a medical emergency. It doesn't have to be a character-based cliffhanger. And then the next week they resolve the medical emergency one way or another. I don't know. I mean, I think that The Pit works as peak TV. And I said this in my piece, mostly because it adheres to this tried and true TV formula of just having extremely hot doctors. Just sexy doctors. I mean, they're not dolled up, the men or the women. They're not made to look sexy. They are. They're just inherently sexy, right? And
my favorite thing about it is there is a buffet to choose from. You ask any two people who the hot doctor is on The Pit, you'll get two different answers every time. There's so many to pick from.
Yeah, I mean, my personal favorite, and I know, Jessica, you don't understand this.
I don't get
is,
this.
Is doc, I love Dr. McKay.
Yeah.
I feel like that's inexplicable. I don't understand
no,
that.
No, I kind of get that.
She's damaged. She's you know, caring, but also kind of harsh. and, you know, and she's been through, she's been dragged behind the pickup truck of life, Dr. McKay has. And, you know, and yet there's a vulnerability. You know, I feel like behind that, that's my personal pick. But
you wrote about you both talked about the buffet, right? So different types of people and colors and creeds and so on. But one thing that really struck me, and I think that maybe that Dr. McKay is a good example of that, is that the buffet includes lots of different ages, right? I mean, Victoria's 18 and I don't know how old different people, different ages. And so you've got this smorgasbord of different ages as well. And so I think that probably Neil and I are about the same age and Dr. McKay is roughly age appropriate.
Roughly. I mean, she's in her late 30s, you know, so it's not like out. I'm like, I'm not going to have a crush on 20-year-old Dr. Javadi. It doesn't appeal to me. Most of the, you know, attractive female doctors are just, you know, not in my TV crush, appropriate TV crush age range. Jessica, you mentioned, I was talking about the male doctors on the show, and you brought up, was Sean Hitosi, who plays the Dr. Yes. Abbott. I hadn't really considered him as a TV.
He's the only choice, I think. I think when you say, who is the hot doctor on The Pit? It's Dr. Abbott. We've yet to see the true broken parts of him, I think. Like, we've seen Robbie excise his traumas for all of us to see. And we've seen, you know, Langdon go through what he's going through. And both very attractive men, to be sure. But we know there is a simmering darkness with Dr. Abbott, and we haven't seen it yet. So I'm interested in figuring out what that is. But in the meantime, I'm enjoying the kind of you know, thrill-seeking, adrenaline-seeking exterior while knowing that there's a certain softness under
I haven't seen the darkness. He's divorced, he's a veteran, and he's missing a leg. Who among us isn't divorced? I don't think any of us are.
isn't divorced or missing a leg or has seen combat.
I haven't done any of those things.
Any second. the one exception to that, and I don't want to be like body shaming or anything, but we were watching, as I watched, one of the nice things about this show being both popular and good is that it's a show that I can watch with my wife. And we were watching the episode, I think it was the penultimate episode, but it may have been the one before that, where Ogilvy and Whittaker are having a heart to heart in the back of the ambulance truck. And we were talking, we were just saying that, you know, it'd be nice to see two women as plain looking as those two male doctors having a conversation about something meaningful and the camera just staying on them for that long. And so, you know, so it's not just hot doctors. I think that maybe they buy some hot doctor capital and then can use it up on
well, side. I would agree that Ogilvy and Whittaker are not, you know, perhaps the most physically attractive men. What Everything okay there at the house? Yeah, do we have some sort of
we're gonna have to go analog.
Oh my god.
All the plots fell down. We're gonna have to rush Jessica's.
It's take me to the pit, you guys. I need to be rushed right there.
So I mean, the thing is, like, okay, one of the reasons why I say hot doctors is, yes, they're mostly physically attractive, but also, you know, I've seen the show described many times as competence porn.
Absolutely. Right? Yes.
Even when the doctors make mistakes, and they do, and they lose patients, which they do, it's never because they're bad at their jobs.
No, bad things happen sometimes. Yeah. Bad things happen sometimes, and you can try with all the skills that you have to mitigate the effects of those bad things happening. But, you know, sometimes doctors lose patients. Sometimes people make mistakes. But, you know, that's kind of what I love so much about The Pit, is that the characters are allowed to do that, just like people, you know, in everyday lives kind of are not polished 100% around.
Yeah, I mean, they have a lot of depth. The characters have, to my mind, yeah, anyway, the way they're written, they have a lot of emotional depth.
Yeah, and that's what I was going to say. You know, I think that you've gone more general. I was just going to say that they have the possibility of going wrong. They're always worried that they're going to mess up. And, you know, and I think that, you know, we do see, you know, they do mess up occasionally, you know, that, you know, and they beat themselves up about that. And I think that leads to their depth, you know, that sometimes that the error is resolved and is apologized for, and sometimes it's not, or sometimes not yet. And, you know, and how far should that be forgiven? I mean, the ongoing question about, you know, the Robbie and Dr. Langdon is how, when should the, whose fault was that? You know, because obviously they both think it's their fault. And then when and how is that forgiven? And I think that, you know, when the stakes are quite often life and death, or might always be life and death, the question of how to apologize is also crucial, you know, and we see that, and self-forgive.
All right, I want to talk.
I also, go yeah.
Well, sorry, I wanted to talk about the politics of the show, because, you know, I think that beyond the personal drama and on the medical realism that sort of defines it, you know, The Pit is an expressly political show, and I know that on the political spectrum, compared to the two of you, I'm like the president of the John Birch Society. When in reality, I'm like, right, I'm like smack in the middle of the American mainstream. But, you know,
that's exactly what the president of the John Birch Society is.
Well, maybe that may be true, although I don't think he is as fond of Jews as I am, or either of you are, for that matter. But what I was going to say is, you know, like, there are, every episode of The Pit pretty much has some express moment of, like, liberal emergency, you know? ICE barges in to the ER carrying a woman who they've clearly injured and who needs to be cared for before they take her to the deportation center. They're, you know, I mean, and, you know, a lot of these are quite justified. You know, there's the whole ongoing plot line about the rape kits this season. There are other moments where Dr. Robbie stops to deliver some sort of lecture. I mean, I don't fault the show for this. I mean, it is, you know, this is not being produced by, you know, some kind of right wing, telecommunications company, but it's there. And I think that's part of what makes the show so, talked about.
I think it's not without merit as well. I think it would be disingenuous in 2025 to be producing a show that purports itself to be hyper-realistic as much as The Pit does. It would be disingenuous for them to have a show set in an urban hospital in 2025 that doesn't acknowledge and deal with the material realities of what it's like to be a healthcare provider in the United States this year, what it's like to be a, you know, a person who is dealing with health insurance in the United States this year. I don't think that is particularly without merit. And I don't think that any of the you could say, political stances they've taken about any of those issues to be, I don't think any of those are unjustified or extreme or incorrect. And also, I think it's an important counterbalance when, you know, 8 out of the top 10 most popular shows on network television this year are from the desk of Taylor Sheridan, right? Like, I think that it presents a accurate, if not a little bit bleeding heart, picture of existing in America in 2026 and what happens when we all become sick, as we inevitably do.
It's different than the first season, because the first season was produced during Joe Biden's presidency. And so, you know, a lot of these the problems with health insurance were and economic inequality were still there, but there was a lot more sort of lecturing about misgendering patients and sort of, you know, sort of more sort of culturally trendy topics. Whereas I feel like this show, like there, as I said in the piece, there's this unspoken emergency that, you know, our public services are being, you know, are threatened, that there are Medicare cuts and there are rural hospitals closing. And, you know, and then you have this, the ICE plot line, which wouldn't have been, wouldn't have really made sense in, you know, in 2022. So it just, it's just something that I think you can't watch the show and not notice.
Yeah, no, I think there's two different parts to what, there's kind of two different parts and then two different modes, right? So two different parts are one, which you mentioned earlier, which is like all the medical stuff. So, you know, I think there is a healthcare emergency. I mean, there's a healthcare emergency under Biden. It's not, you know, the American healthcare is terrible and is now radically
terrible, but also quite technologically advanced.
Right. Because the two are not actually, you know, in any way opposed. So I think that, you know, I think that's what Jessica was saying before, that the show really has to deal with that. It could not deal with being an ER in an urban center without actually having something about that in it. And then the other side is, the other thing is like the ICE stuff and the politics, you know, of the wider world. And I think that, again, that was before the war on Iran was declared, that was massively important for the last 6 months of the year. And I think the other thing about, like, the way that the pit is produced is that it's quite quick from, like, the idea to actually the screen. So it can do something like that. So those are the two topics. And then the two modalities are how far it's organic and how far it's actually slightly clunkily done. And I think was clunky, right? I mean,
ICE plot line was clunky, right?
Yeah, I think that they wanted to write something about it. It was kind of real. Like, was it totally unbelievable? No, but just it kind of clunked in and clunked out, and, you know, and it was something to say, and so it was really evident. I mean, I think partly that's what ICE does. I mean, if you're in Minnesota, like, I think that ICE is pretty much clunking around,
or at least they were. But I do think you're right. I think that plot line was more didactic than the health insurance stuff, you could take your time with, and which is an ongoing problem, and you could kind of just ease into it. I did want to mention before we turn this over to the night shift I thought it was interesting too. The show has, you know, more than its occasional takes on, like, alternative healthcare types. Like, there was that woman in one episode who was suffering from a liver failure because she was taking too much turmeric.
That's Noah Wiley's wife, right?
Okay, so the actress was Noah Wiley's. It wasn't based on.
Oh, yeah. I don't think that was a real world event. She's an actor. Okay,
sometimes I can't tell the difference. The acting is so real on the show. And then there was in the final episode this season, it largely focused around this woman who, you know, was trying to have a, quote, wild pregnancy, and you know, nearly killed herself and her baby because she wanted to refuse medical care. That was an extremely visceral scene, even by the Pitt standards, that was incredibly involving, and it took up a good half of the episode.
Yeah, and I think part of the reason for having that in the final episode was to bring it back to Baby Jane Doe.
Yeah, you have to. It all comes. I was hoping that maybe that maybe Dr. Robbie doesn't go on his motorcycle trip and he just adopts Baby Jane Doe and. You know,
exactly. He's got 3 months booked off.
Three months, and he has enough time to find her a daycare so he can go back to his extremely traumatic day job.
No, and I mean, I think that the point of a lot of what we're seeing on this season of The Pitt is the toll that it takes on the individuals who do that. Robbie is at a breaking point. Dana is at a breaking point. Santos is at a breaking point. They are all at a breaking point, and they're all dealing with it differently in their own, personally messed up ways. But it's confronting to see all of that. And I think the point that you're supposed to come away with is I can't imagine what it's like to do this on a daily basis. I would potentially want to drive a motorcycle off a cliff as well. I can't imagine it.
I can't imagine driving a motorcycle at all. Like one time I did a freelance assignment and I went to the MotoGP races out at the track here in Austin, and I had to sit on the back of a motorcycle with a professional motorcycle racer. And he literally just like drove me around in a circle in a ring. And I was like, I'm never going to get on a motorcycle again.
Not for me.
I think that's what we learn. I think that's what we've learned from The Pit is that it's totally suicidal to want to get on the back of a motorbike.
Yeah. That's the message, right? And I think we're getting our physician heal thyself moment here, where you can see Robbie can participate in, doing an emergency C-section and supervising Langdon as he puts that man's spine back in place, but he can't reconcile what that all means for him. And I guess we'll see how that continues to bear out on the next day.
The Valentine's Day episode.
It's Thanksgiving, I think. I think they've said that the next season will be taking place in November.
But what's interesting is that I think that the only sane career that you can take from being in the ER for an amount of time is thinking about health, mental health, right? You know, that's Javadi comes in and she's like, how can anyone do this? Oh, the only way that you can make sense of this is if you just think about people's mental
health. All right, well, have you guys chosen your specialties yet? We're going to wrap this up, but obviously we're not going to be able to do this podcast forever.
Well, if I want to come back on this podcast, I think that I better specialize in geriatrics.
I've got that pretty much locked down.
Okay.
I'll take radiology. They brought that guy in for one episode. Everyone swooned over him for a while, and I could be that player.
He was hot because he works at a hospital in Pittsburgh. Apparently, that is the real. You have to be brilliant and caring, but you also have to be physically quite beautiful.
Oh, if you've already got geriatrics down, I might go into anesthesiology. Yeah. I think I could put people to sleep.
Yeah, I think this episode is a testament to that for all of our abilities to put people to sleep. Anyway, if you all have no idea what the hell we've been talking about for the last 22 minutes and a half, The Pitt Season 2 is on HBO. I have to go. There's an ambulance pulling up to my front door, and Jessica's husband is probably dropping some more pots. So she's got to go deal with that. And Dan, I'm sure you have some sort of ridiculous emergency.
I'm gonna have to go analog here. My entire internet is being by some.
And also a water park just exploded. All right, guys, thanks for talking.
Thanks so much, Neil.
Bye, everybody. Thank you.
All right, thanks, Dan Friedman. Thanks, Jessica Babbitt. Season 2 of The Pitt is now available to stream on HBO Max. I am Neil Pollack. I am the former editor-in-chief of Book and Film Globe. I am the greatest living American writer. Book and Film Globe is a product of Sea of Reeds Media. Please check out our two independent bookstores in Millburn, New Jersey, and in Long Branch on the Jersey Shore. I will talk to you soon.
Audio Hopper.